And she said, "What is this ready of which you speak? Love your children, teach them what you can, and lean hard on Jesus. And when all else fails, it's not the curriculum, and it's not the books, and it's nothing that I do. I love my children, I teach them what I can, and if I can lean hard on Jesus and they can see that, then that's grace."
Welcome to Homeschool Conversations with Humility and Doxology, a series of interviews with real-life homeschool moms, dads, and other educators on all sorts of topics that affect our lives as homeschool parents. I'm Amy Sloan, a second-generation homeschool mom of five, and I am so delighted that you are here. Here on Homeschool Conversations, we'll discuss educational philosophy, family life, and more. Come chat with us. Hey guys, before we get started with this week's episode, I wanted to let you know that this is actually the last episode in this season of the Homeschool Conversations podcast. Don't worry, your earbuds will not be lonely this summer. I have reached out to some of my friends in the online homeschool world, and they are going to be bringing you guest audio blogs each week this summer. Topics covered will include things like bringing enchantment to your homeschool learning, how to choose the best homeschool schedule, read aloud tips, and more. There's absolutely nothing you have to do. Just make sure you are already subscribed to this podcast in your podcast player. And hey, while you're here, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review of the podcast? I'll be back this fall with more regular season interview content. Happy summer! Hello, friends. Today I am joined by Megan Sabin. She is a follower of her gracious Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And Megan and her husband and their five boys live in Southwest Virginia, one of my favorite areas of the country. I love North Carolina and Virginia and the mountains. Anyway, where Megan homeschools, she plays with words, knits, and never quite keeps up with the demand for homemade chai. She is associate editor for Redeemed Reader and the author of Something Better Coming. And I actually reached out to you, Megan, because an in real life friend of mine, shout out to Sarah Thrasher, she listens to the podcast. She sent me a message on Instagram and was like, "Hey, do you know Megan Sabin? She spoke at my mom's group at church 16 years ago, and it was amazing. And I really think you should talk to her." So whatever you said at that mom's meeting group at their church obviously was used by the Lord, although these many years in the future.
I love it.
Well, Megan, could you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your family and how you guys came to start homeschooling?
Sure. I was homeschooled in Iowa where I was growing up, and that's back when it was illegal in Iowa. So I remember going and, you know, picketing in front of the Capitol, and, you know, holding up signs and being on TV and, you know, being in the newspaper. And, you know, really my homeschooling then was mostly going and playing in the barns and reading a lot of books. We didn't have any animals. I just played lots of make-believe in the barns and reading books and doing math sometimes and assigning myself a research paper because I love to write. And I just remember mom washing a lot of dishes, and I had seven siblings, so there were a lot of babies. And every now and then she would do unit studies. So like we did a big salt map of Africa, I think. But it was in the early days of homeschooling. And when I was in about fifth grade, my parents sent me to a small Christian school in our church basement. And there I had a really good high school education, and I was in a class of five. But it had basically whetted my appetite for homeschooling. And when I started working as a children's librarian after getting master's degrees in children's literature and library science, and my supervisor gave me a $1,000 budget to spend on homeschooling materials. So I was like, wow, this is great. I get to spend other people's money on books. And that's what I did. So I became known as the homeschool librarian. And that was fun until I got married and moved out to Virginia. And my husband and I always knew that we wanted to homeschool. And that pretty much consisted of being surrounded by books and trying to figure out what was the best way to get it all done while I was still having babies and trying to figure out what worked. So
I love that story. I've always thought being a librarian would be such an ideal job, just to get be surrounded by books and get to recommend them to people like all the time.
It was. And actually, I first pursued a master's in children's literature at Holland University. But I had an undergraduate in English from Covenant College. And what am I going to do with that if I didn't want to be a classroom teacher? So being a librarian was a natural fit because my grandmother had been a librarian. I'd grown up surrounded by books. And that was how I justified getting a master's in children's literature. But I always wanted to write too, and to write about books. So that worked out nicely. Oh, and I met my then future husband at a church in Roanoke. And so it was all God's wonderful providence. And
Well, Megan, I love chatting with fellow second generation homeschoolers because it's really interesting to see how God takes your own experience and then you sort of apply things both positively, like, oh, I want to continue this, or, oh, I want to do things differently, you know, in your own unique homeschool family. Right. I would love to hear then how your own family's approach to education has grown or changed over the years that you've been homeschooling.
So when my oldest, who's now 14, was about five, we started with My Father's World, and I think we got about halfway through. And I loved the idea, the book nature of it, and we did as much as we could, but I also had a toddler and a baby at the time, and it was just... my oldest wasn't having as much fun with it as I wanted him to. And I had all of these ideals and he just wasn't excited about picture study and classical music and nature study. And I was trying so hard. And he didn't even want to learn how to read because I had read him Pinocchio and The Hobbit while I was nursing him. And so he didn't want to waste his time on things like Hats, Hats, Hats or Bob books. He wanted audiobooks. And so I was just, feeling my imperfections and struggling. And then someone told me about classical conversations. And that turned out to be a good fit for us because it gives just enough structure. I feel like someone else has made just enough decisions for the big picture. I don't have to figure it out every single year. And having a community day one day a week gives my boys lots of time to be with their friends. And my older two are accountable to another teacher to be motivated to get things done. And it leaves me more freedom to do the things I really want to do with them at home, which is mostly, read books and sometimes just teach them how to do laundry and, get through the day. And so that's been a good fit. Not that I love absolutely everything about classical conversations. I've had to kind of reconcile to, okay, I would have done something differently. But like I said, it gives the structure that I need so that I know we're making progress.
Yeah. And just like any other homeschool curriculum, it's become a tool that you can use. You know, it doesn't have to be the master over your homeschool.
Right. And I see that some of my boys thrive in certain areas and some of them thrive in others. And so having some of those decisions made gives me freedom to encourage them in their strengths and to help them in their weaknesses, rather than thinking, as I have many times, maybe a different math program would help. So really what made a difference in math is my husband is an engineer and he loves math. So being dismissed from that responsibility has been a wonderful blessing. And so my boys go up and at least, even if they're not doing a math lesson every day, he knows where they are and he's okay with it. And he's a good teacher rather than me just being frustrated and saying, oh, just go do it. That wouldn't work. It didn't work.
Yeah. Well, for anyone who's listening who wants to hear another podcast episode related to classical conversations, I interviewed Mark Hayes, I think last season or maybe two seasons ago, and he's one of the curriculum directors at CC and a longtime friend of mine. So
I will have to listen to that one.
Yeah. Well, Megan, what are some of your favorite parts of homeschooling? I've heard you already mention books, which does not surprise me, but anything else?
I think having the relationships with my boys and being able to listen to things together while we're on our way to art lessons or piano lessons or anything like that. Some of the conversations that we have just out of the blue, really being able to listen to fighter verses and poetry or Judy Rogers, or even if it's, you know, the electronic of video game themes that they love, just being able to appreciate each of my boys for who they are and learning how to nurture them and appreciate them. We try to connect over devotions most days. It doesn't happen. And doing World Watch together so that we are familiar with current events and sometimes just the funny things that are going on. It helps us to pray and to have conversations. But then we also read aloud from a variety of books and, you know, try to work on memorizing or reviewing scripture. You know, it's all the ideals, but sometimes it's really short and sometimes we have longer, and other times it's just delayed and we just do the best we can. We also love attending homeschool dances several times a year. They're not super formal, but I have some boys who really love dancing. My husband and I love dancing. And so we get out there on the floor a lot. And I have some other boys who just sit along the wall and they watch, and that's okay.
My teens went to their first local-ish homeschool dance this winter and loved it. It was such a good memory for my own teen years doing similar things. But this particular one doesn't have the adults dance. Like, we're just supposed to be chaperones, and it was so sad.
That's disappointing. My husband and I like to, well, basically we can waltz. We did ballroom dancing when we first had babies, and then it just wasn't working. But we can waltz. And so they always do a simple waltz, you know, that's not a group dance. And so my husband and I are trying to encourage that movement and try and get other parents out there on the floor, even though right now we're just about the only one. But some other people are saying, yes, I want to do that too. So.
Well, I think we should just make dancing like part of normal life again.
You know, we should.
Just like have friends over for dinner and be like, hey, let's go do the Virginia Reel in the backyard.
Exactly. Learning that structure and that it is fun. And as my 10-year-old said a couple of years ago when he was dancing with his classmates on the way home, he said, just because you ask a girl to dance doesn't mean you have to marry her. And that is great.
Important life lessons.
It is. It's a healthy way for them to interact. And then there's, you know, nothing permanent. So yeah, the one we go to is a family dance and it's really neat.
That's fun. Oh, I have all these rabbit trails I want to talk to you about.
I know.
Stay focused, okay. Amy. All right. Well, we know that homeschooling is not always, you know, roses and sunshine. And, you know, you mentioned even in your talking about the favorite parts, that kind of reality that those favorite parts don't always happen. So what have been some of the challenges of homeschooling? And then how do you seek to overcome those challenges?
Well, I have learned over the years that, you know, when I have a problem, I feel like I need to make a checklist to make it happen. And I've made some really nice checklists, and they really don't last. And so I'm realizing that checklists are not a solution. They're not the best way to track our learning or our progress. And really at the end of the year, I don't care about how many times I checked off the box. It's more, you know, the memories that we made, you know, that maybe I wrote down in my 5-year journal or in my planner or something like that. And I really struggle with starting the school day before 11 o'clock in the morning because I've got things to do. And even if I think, okay, we're going to start at 10:30 today, somebody needs some character training. And so, okay, I guess it's 11 o'clock again. So just learning to embrace the interruptions and the distractions and just accept them and trust that, you know, the Lord is going to accomplish his purposes, whether I, you know, start at 11 o'clock and have a neat checklist or not. Another challenge that I have that probably most of your listeners have is too many books and not enough bookshelves. Yeah. So I actually found a solution during, yes. Okay. Are you ready for this? Over Christmas, I found an app. It's called Handy Library. And part of the problem was I was afraid of forgetting where my books were, because if I put them in a box, even if I say these boxes are the American history books and these boxes are the biographies, I'm not going to be able to remember or go through the trouble of digging them out. So this app lets me do a visual catalog, basically, of all the covers. And so I can say box one, box two, box three, box four. I have about 3 more boxes I need to do in here. And so I can take those piles of books in the hallway or the random ones that are overflowing and crowding the bookshelves, and I can put them in boxes and be able to find exactly what I want when I want it. So each record is really customizable, which makes my little librarian heart very happy. But for the sake of getting it done and not overthinking it, right now I'm really just getting them in boxes. And that's really helped my housekeeping because there aren't so many piles of clutter. And I feel like, yeah, like I can find what I need when I need it. So
I love that. I actually just downloaded the app. It's Libib or Libib, L-I-B-I-B. And just because a friend was already using it, so I didn't even research. I just was like, okay, fine. And I was thinking this will be helpful if I'm out at a used bookstore. Right. I won't be like, do I own that? Was that something my mom owns? Like, did I borrow that from the library? But I didn't even think about using it to actually declutter some of our bookshelves or use something where you could, that's really smart.
Yeah. And keep that in mind. This has an option where you can keep track of books that you loan to friends. And it has a place where you can track your wish list. So for example, I have some series that I would like to find a hardcover to replace a softcover. Or we've got most of the series, but we're missing one. And so I can put in there books that I want to track down. Or if I'm putting an order on 5th books and just need one more book to fill it out. Handy Library app is a game changer. It's my game changer of the year.
That's amazing. I will definitely put a link to that app in the show notes for this episode. Yeah. I think many homeschool moms are like frantically like right now, downloading it right now.
I hope so. And it's $4 for the premium. So
that is reasonable.
Total no-brainer. I also find another challenge is running out the door on piano lessons and art lesson days and always feeling rushed. And so just deciding Wednesdays we do corn dogs and Thursdays we do chicken tenders and having those pre-made decisions helps. So
it's a lot of times those little decisions, they're not even about something important, like what you're going to have for lunch or what you're going to have for dinner, but that can just be what drains you so much because there's so many of them every day with every child. And so that's really wise. Just find some things that you can just take the decision out of the equation.
Right.
It's just like a burden lifted.
Right. And if my boys are excited about corn dogs, then we'll just pick a day that they can have corn dogs.
There you go. And then you get to be the cool mom too.
Right. Exactly.
Bonus points.
Exactly.
Well, I'm very excited to chat with you because you are a fellow book lover. And so, you know, books have already been coming up a lot, but I would love to hear a little bit about your own personal story of how you came to love books and then sort of big picture, more philosophy. Why do you think stories in particular matter in our lives and in the lives of our children?
Okay. So as I said earlier, my grandmother was a librarian. My mother went to all the used book sales at the library, and I just grew up surrounded by books. And as she's unpacking her boxes of books in the closet, I'm appreciating more of her collection. And so one whole wall of my room was built in bookshelves. And some of those books were wonderful, and I read them over and over and over again, like Magic Elizabeth and Fairy Tales and All of the Kind Family. And some of them looked really boring, and I still have never cracked them open. And my mother despaired and thought that I was never going to read the classics because I was wasting my time on fairy tales. So fast forward to my senior year of college at Covenant, and I took a class on children's literature that was taught by the assistant librarian that I worked for. And in one class session, he talked about truth with a capital T and truth with a lowercase t, and story with a capital S and story with a lowercase s. That day was life-changing for me because I could start to see how truth with a capital T, which is any truth as God has ordained it, creation, fall, redemption, wisdom, foolishness, good and evil, and the battle, and you know, even the happily ever after ending, those are all woven into us by God. And that's the truth that we are longing for. And then you have lowercase truth, which is fact and, you know, things that we agree on. You know, alligators are different than crocodiles. Okay. Elephants do not lay eggs. Okay. Those are truth with a lowercase t. And a lot of books have those. So then you have story with a capital S. And it's kind of hard for me to describe what that quality of story is, but it would be more than just an experience. Good examples of story with a capital S would be Chronicles of Narnia or Lord of the Rings or fairy tales, anything that shows that there is more than just an experience. It's not just getting through a day. It's how you handle a crisis or a problem, and its character development, and a really well-crafted story that lingers with you, that you want to read over and over again, and you want to share with someone else, okay? So then you can take capital T truth and capital S story, and those would really be like Lord of the Rings or Chronicles of Narnia or a lot of other really high quality books that are out there. And those are the ones that you really read over and over and over and over again, and they change you. But you can also have books that are capital T truth and lowercase s story. And those would be things like Sunday school pamphlets or some of the books that are popular, and they're things like God Loves You, You Are Special. Those are true. They're very true, but there's not much story to really engage you. Or you can have lowercase t truth and capital S story. And those are stories that are really well told, but they do not reflect God's truth. Years ago, I read the Philip Pullman Golden Compass trilogy. And that was when I first really saw this play out, because the story was really good, but I found myself having to stop and think, wait a minute, my sympathies are with the wrong side. And so learning to recognize sort of this range, it's not like it's in neat little boxes, but this range of truth and story. And it doesn't mean that we should never read lowercase t truth books or lowercase s. I think I would say lowercase t and lowercase s books would be things like Garfield, which my boys love to bring home from the library, and I tolerate, and I'm glad to take them back to the library. And it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world, because I know that they're reading a lot of other really good things. Did that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
As the school year winds down, homeschool moms everywhere are reflecting on their year. We're remembering what went well, wondering what to change, and possibly questioning if we're doing any of it right. It's easy to feel like your homeschool has gotten off track from what you envisioned. The day-to-day tasks and challenges can pile up in your mind and feel like failures. But let me reassure you of something you already know. These things don't define your homeschool. We all have frustrations and question ourselves. Homeschooling definitely isn't easy, but I promise you can find joy and purpose in your days together. Want to renew your homeschool with beauty, connection, and delight this year? Join me June 8th through 10th for Renew Homeschool Gathering, an online homeschool conference hosted by Learning Through Literature. It's all about encouraging and equipping you for the coming school year with inspiring ideas and practical tips. You'll hear from an amazing group of speakers with advice on how to renew your homeschool vision, connect with your kids, and delight in your homeschooling days. No magic formulas or lofty goals that promise a brand new homeschool. Just practical, inspiring ideas that can benefit any homeschool. Session topics will include literature, nature study, art, music, writing, geography, game schooling, financial literacy, and more. You'll hear from seasoned homeschoolers about connecting with your kids through adventure and travel, creating vision and mindset in your homeschool, adding enchantment and wonder, avoiding burnout, and transitioning to those scary middle and high school years. And I'll be speaking about Shakespeare because you guys know how much I love to geek out about simple and easy ways to include Shakespeare in your homeschool. If you want to learn more, check the show notes for information about the conference and make sure you register during the early bird pricing for a discounted rate. I hope you'll join me for this exciting homeschooling event. Replays will be available if you can't make it live, but be sure to sign up now to grab your seat. Yeah, I love that. I haven't heard it with the capital T, lower T truth and the capital S, lowercase s story, but I've thought about this idea. And in my own mind, I've kind of thought of like the XY axis, you know, from math, because one of the things that I think people get hung up on a lot, especially on the internet, when everyone likes to tell people what to do, is it's like the good books and the bad books. And like people have these very distinct categories in their head. And so instead, I think it's more like if you think of one axis being like how well the story is told and one axis being, you know, how well it reflects God's truth, books are going to be scattered all in that plot, right? And so every family and every individual is going to, of course, finds their own range of the graph that they're comfortable with, but it's not so much like these strict categories. It's much not complicated, but maybe more nuanced than that. Yeah.
Right. Well, and it's a good way to just talk about what you're reading and to be, you know, pursuing discernment and literary criticism. And some books you can really just enjoy and you don't have to discuss them. But it's just one more tool to put in your pocket of, well, would you say that that was a capital S story or a lowercase s story? You and your child may have different opinions, and that's okay too. But even capital S stories may have that have mostly lower T truth. You know, they're written by secular authors and may not have a lot of depth. They can hint at capital T truth. So it's just another way of seeing why it is that some books resonate so well with us and are so strong and really, you know, carry on to the next generation.
I love that. That's a great tool for our conversations with our kids. I will never forget a few years ago, you know, you mentioned Garfield, and every once in a while, you know, the kids will get cotton candy books from the library. It's like, fine, I don't want them in my house necessarily. I have very little bookshelf space. I'm not going to read them to you, but knock yourself out. Like, you won't die. And so my older two children were reading the How to Train Your Dragon series. And I was so snotty about it. Like, I just really thought that was like the dumbest thing they could be reading. And then the Lord really used that to humble me, because I was puttering around the kitchen doing dinner and they were sitting discussing this book series. And they were literally talking about like, you know, I feel like this book is really asking us question, what makes a man and who is a hero? And like, did you notice how these two characters are giving two different answers to this question? And they're like having this whole deep profound conversation. I was like, okay, I stand corrected. I always think of that.
Yeah, that's why I'm not too strict about what my boys bring home from the library. I try to be aware, especially if I hear that, you know, there's a book that, you know, there's some concern about. But yeah, you know, the Lord can use any of those things. And that's why there's really no perfect book list. There is one book that we need to read, and that is the Bible. There's no question. Otherwise, having too many book lists of all the right books is overwhelming, and it keeps changing, and it depends on who you talk to. So you can't read them all because they're not going to all be at your library, and they might just make you too busy to reread a really good book or to read a book that your child, you know, wants to have time for. And my boys are all avid readers. They read more than I do these days. And so I'm grateful that they're reading more challenging books, but at the same time, we can have better conversations about Calvin and Hobbes than about some of these other, you know, great literary works that they will appreciate next time that they read them. Yeah. I mentioned that my oldest didn't want to read the Bob books and Hats, Hats, Hats. And what actually convinced him that reading was worthwhile was Calvin and Hobbes. He found those at my brother's house and he said, well, I could read, I just didn't want to admit it because I didn't want to read those stupid books. So he started devouring Calvin and Hobbes and Tintin when he was about 7. And then his brother saw that he was enjoying these books so much and wanted to do whatever his brother was doing. So he started reading Calvin and Hobbes and Tintin. And then the third boy did the same thing. Well, he wanted to start with the German language dictionary and my college logic textbook, but he just loves that. And then the fourth son is still kind of struggling to read. He is making progress, but I used to buy reading curriculum, and then I realized it was becoming one more thing to check off the list that we were not enjoying. And really the point of learning to read is just to enjoy reading. And so the more exposure they have to books they want to read, you know, they'll get it eventually.
That's a really good encouragement, I think, for moms maybe who are stressed out, you know, like, oh no, my kid isn't reading what I thought they ought to be reading at such and such an age. That's just such a good encouragement. And just pointing out those simple ways you're asking the same questions of Calvin and Hobbes that you're going to be asking of Homer. But right, for a child, they will probably learn how to think about a book much more right, easily. They'll learn the questions. They'll learn how right, to think about a book much right, easier with something that's maybe a little more accessible to begin right, with. And then they apply it later on. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even easy readers, you can talk about why is this a better story than this one? You know, like the Elephant and Piggy books, I would say those are mostly lowercase t truth. Although some of the books I would say are uppercase T. There's one where they are, where Elephant is struggling to be patient, and what he's waiting for that Piggy wants to show him is the glorious night sky. So you can, sorry, I just spoiled it for you. But you read something like that and it's worth rereading because a child knows how it is to struggle, to be patient, to wait for something exciting. And there are other easy readers that my 14-year-old brings to me and says, why did we get this from the library? I don't know, because my 5-year-old put it on hold. And he'll say, well, you know, read this. You know, the character is really not good. And it's really not, you know, showing anything worthwhile. Okay, we'll take those back. So, you know, the fact that my oldest can recognize those things, he's learned a lot of discernment over the years. And sometimes you can't quite put it into words, but it is a family ongoing conversation.
Yeah, that's not something you can put on your checklist.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk to the mom who's like, this all sounds great. And it sounds like y'all, you know, you're a librarian and you both were homeschooled or you had a lot of books growing up or whatever, but I am walking into the library or walking into the bookstore and feeling completely overwhelmed. I'm staring at a bookshelf and I don't recognize any of the titles, any of the authors. to that mom, how does she just pick? How does she know? Like, she pulls a book off the shelf and she's like, should I take this home or not? What are some ways she can make that decision?
Okay. Well, first of all, it depends. Is she in the picture books and the easy readers or in the chapter book section and the graphic novels? If she's in the picture books and the easy readers, well, actually, first of all, I would say the first thing I look at is the illustrations and the artwork, because so many picture books are given mediocre artwork. I already know that the story is probably going to be mediocre. And if it doesn't appeal to me and I don't want to read it, then I don't want to take it home. Now, there are some books, like at used library sales, that have really bad covers, but they're classics. You know what? I'm going to wait until I can find a better copy. Or if I know it's hard to find, I might buy it and look for a replacement eventually. So the visual appeal is huge to me. The second thing I would say is just trial and error. You're going to learn as you go. So it helps to just start making a list of authors and illustrators that you like. And then when you go back, you know, for example, the Nate the Great books, there's a whole bunch of them in the easy readers section. So your child can just binge read those for a little while. But it helps to have a list to start with that you can put books on hold when you're at home and then pick them up at the library. And then you don't have to be standing there faced with a whole bunch of decisions. If the book that is in your hand is one that your child brought to you and said, please, 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 can I take this home? That is harder, because you're going to have to decide, is my child able to discern if there are some concerns in this book? Are we going to discuss it later? You know, then you need to remember to ask some of these questions. What does it say about where things came from? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? And these days you can ask, what does it say about men and women or boys and girls? That's a really important one too. You don't need to beat your child over the head with, oh, we have to answer all these questions and you have to write a book report. You just keep the casual conversation going. And like I said, it helps to have an older child who will read those things. And he's pointed out, you know, Mom, in this board book, there are two men in bed together in the morning. And that's in a board book. I hadn't taken the time to look at it. But later on, we got to have a really good conversation about, why does it matter that God designed families to be with one man and one woman? It's a picture of Christ and his body. That's really what it is. It is Christ and his bride, Christ and his church. You can't have a body with two heads. So sometimes using that opportunity, if you bring something home and think, okay, we're not going to take this out again, use it as an opportunity. And I will say too, sometimes books by an author that I like, I don't like everything that author does. So it's not necessarily an automatic green light. Okay, I'm going to take a minute and see what else I wanted to remember. Okay, so I'm going to put in a plug for Redeemed Reader right now. Redeemed Reader is a website where I and three other ladies are trying to help parents by reading ahead for you, because I can't read all those books and you can't read all those books. And how do we make those decisions? So if you have a few minutes at the library, then you can check Redeemed Reader and see if the title has been reviewed. And if there are any cautions that are mentioned at the end, if you don't have time to read the whole review, look at the bottom. Is there evolution? Is there language? Is there sex? Is there, you know, are there other issues? And it depends on what your comfort level is with some of those things and what your child is mature enough for. So even if that particular book hasn't been reviewed, because we're a small group and we're trying, but we can't cover them all. you can at least look up the author and see if that title is in there. I will say that there's one series that we reviewed the first couple books and they were fine. And someone else came and said, do you realize that books 11 and 12 have gender fluid characters? No, we didn't go and read all of the rest of the series. So parents need to continue to be discerning. If Redeemed Reader hasn't covered the book, then you can always look on Amazon or on Goodreads. And sometimes you can, you know, catch some sense of whether it's a well-written book or what kind of content is in there. And if there's any question, you can always either decide to take it home and you can look at it first when you have a few more minutes and you don't have three other children who are, you know, saying, can I bring this book too? Then you can read the first couple pages and read a couple pages in the middle and read a few pages at the end and just pray that God would open your eyes and lead you to those pages where there might be problems. So that's one approach. Or you can just focus on putting books on hold from home, and then you've got some pre-made decisions there. And that will at least reduce the number of, can I get this huge stack of books when they're at the library?
Right.
I also wanted to say about illustrations, I said that they're really important to me. For years, I avoided reading Little Pilgrim's Progress by Helen Taylor because I could not stand the illustrations. They all just seem to be really mediocre. And I believe that children really appreciate good quality illustrations. So every October, I read a version of Pilgrim's Progress aloud to my boys, usually Dangerous Journey, because they love the gory, very detailed pictures. And it's short, but the language is still really rich. But we've read some other versions too, and it's fun to see the contrast and the differences. But when Moody came out with this new version of Little Pilgrim's Progress, I got a review copy, and I was really impressed. So we've been reading this one now, and I am enjoying it in a way that I couldn't have if I was just settling for a book that the text was good, but not the illustration. So
I recognize that cover from seeing it all over social media for the past few months. For those who were not watching the video, could you share the illustrator? What's the name of the illustrator of the new book?
It's Little Pilgrim's Progress by Helen Taylor, and it's envisioned and illustrated by Joe Suthin, S-U-T-P-H-I-N. And having my thoughts. One difference that they made in this edition is they changed the children to animals. And so some people might not agree with that decision, but I appreciate it. I feel like using cats or owls or rabbits or, you know, different kinds of animals helps to show the nature of the characters. And because so many good classic children's books do have animals in them, I think that that made the book more timeless.
Yeah, that's really fun. I know I'm on a like, don't buy any more books. But I keep finding all these new books I want to add.
Exactly.
It's really hard.
Well, this is going to be around for a while. So you can always put it on your handy library app on your wish list.
That's right.
And it's there and you won't forget.
That's right. Okay. Resisting temptation.
Now let's hear from podcast sponsor and Sloan family favorite, Mr. D himself from Mr. D Math.
Does your child love math, surpassing your ability to teach them? Or maybe you have a child struggling in math and you're looking for a solution that will help them finally get it. You want your teen to understand, love, and enjoy their math curriculum. Is that too much to ask? At Mr. D Math, we've got you covered. Many times a young person says they hate math simply because it hasn't been explained in a way that makes sense to them. At Mr. D Math, our teachers are dedicated to providing accessible support, instructing with clarity, and making math fun. We work with students from around the world, helping connect educational concepts to their everyday lives and exposing them to endless possibilities and potential for their futures. Head to MrDMath.com to check out our live and self-paced course options for math, life skills, test prep, and more. We even have courses to get your child ready for high school math or help them catch up or get ahead in a semester or less. Go to MrDMath.com or click the link in the show notes to see how Mr. D Math can bring clarity and joy to your homeschool.
What if I told you that there was a way to incorporate freedom into your homeschool planning? A way to blend flexibility and a well-ordered day. Homeschool planning doesn't have to be scary. I have created a free homeschool planning guide to help you ask the right big picture questions to set your long-term homeschool goals, and it will also give you 7 simple steps to craft a peaceful, orderly homeschool plan. If you want access to this free ebook, just head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-planning-guide or just click the link in the show notes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this, the practical realities of bringing reading into our own lives, you know, reading books on our own as moms and reading with our kids, because a lot of times we have these ideals or we'll hear people on a podcast talking about books and we're like, yes, okay, today I'm going to read with my children for 2 hours. And, you know, the reality is that just doesn't happen all that often. Maybe some of you listeners, that's your life. That's not my life. So I would just love to hear, like, what are some of your tips for not having, I guess, an all or nothing kind of approach for including, but also making sure that we do include it. So you do have to be purposeful. Right. You can't just be like, we'll get to it, because then it never happens. So, and then what encouragement would you have for a mom who's feeling like she's not reading enough?
Okay. Well, first of all, let me encourage you. I'm not reading enough either. And I'm really not reading to my kids nearly as long or as often as I wish I could. And I'm not reading myself as much as I really want to. There are so many other things going on, and that's okay. My boys are readers. And so when I have time to read with them, I want to make sure that I'm choosing something I want to read. Because when I've picked up something I felt obligated to read, I didn't enjoy it, and they didn't enjoy it, and we either put it down or it really did not increase the joy. There weren't any conversations later on about what we were reading. So the first priority is reading the Bible, because everything else is optional. And so, but even that can take different forms. Reading scripture with your children might come in reviewing memory work or in fighter verses, the CDs from Truth 78 or Children Desiring God. Those have been a huge key in our family homeschooling life from the beginning. Not overthinking what you want to read. It doesn't have to be the perfect choice. It doesn't have to be on 3 book lists in order to be good enough to read. It doesn't have to be approved by a literary influencer. What do you have in your hand? Do you have a picture book that you really love? Do you have an easy reader or a chapter book? Just sometimes having too many choices can really be paralyzing. So being content and not overthinking it and just taking it one day at a time. That kind of sounds cheesy, to be honest.
But it's true.
Well, it is true. And you know what? If you can read a chapter and your children ask for another one, go ahead and read another one. I think always having a book along or be working on an audiobook. And sometimes we have audiobooks that I'm listening to with this child and some that we're listening to with the whole group. And so definitely using audiobooks so that I'm not the only one reading. And anything that John McDonough reads, especially if it's Freddie the Pig or Homer Price, I think he's also done The Great Brain. He is one of our favorite readers, and I'd rather listen to him read than read the book myself. So when we're on our way to art lessons or piano lessons, I'm thankful that we have a bit of a drive so we can listen. And then I can relax and enjoy it more too. My husband reads a chapter or two of something in the evening if we're, you know, doing well, getting ready for bed. Having books in different places in the house, so, you know, next to the bed and in the bathroom and next to where you sit down, just wherever you have a few minutes to pick something up and read. Some people can only read one book at a time, and I do better reading several because sometimes the books are talking to each other and sometimes I just am not in the mood for something heavy. Mr. Pettit, the librarian who taught the children's literature class, gave us the tip about strewing, that if you're concerned that your kids aren't reading enough, have it appealing as book covers. So leaving books lying around, yes, it looks messy, it's okay. Nonfiction for boys and also for girls who tend to be more active and have shorter attention spans, you know, things like the DK books. So just trusting that the Lord is using those little grains of sand and that they do build up over the years. Something else I wanted to mention is there's a Redeemed Reader Reading Challenge that is available on our website. And that's a good way to get the whole family involved in reading more broadly, reading some more variety. And picture books count, and so do graphic novels. So you might be reading one book together as a family and someone else is adding what they're reading to the list. And if you are, you know, promising ice cream at the end of, you know, each level of the challenge or something, then, you know, whatever works.
Ice cream's always a good idea.
Exactly. Or lattes. For us, it'd be Starbucks.
There you go. I'll make sure to put a link to that reading challenge in the show notes too. I love everything you just said. I think so often there can be this like pressure that comes maybe from, well, I don't know if you know Dawn Garretts, but she talks about the composite homeschool mom who kind of torments us. And we take this piece from this one homeschool mom and this piece from another one and this piece from another one. And we like splice it all together in this ideal homeschool mom, right? As if any one of those people are all of those things at the same time. And I think with our reading life too, it can be the same way. Like we see this family that seems to do really well, all sitting around after dinner, reading the chapter book with the dad, and this family that's doing their, you know, poetry tea time book clubs themed for their reading, and this other family. And we're like, we're supposed to do all of those things all the time. And you just can't. No one is. Right. And that's okay.
Yeah. And I used to try to do, you know, the afternoon tea time. It's a lot easier to do it in the summer. And to just go out and do iced tea and popcorn and read a couple poems. But my mistake then was trying to fit too many things in there. And I think it would just drag on. And rather than just trying to, just picking something that we would all enjoy and maybe something that would stretch the boys' interests a little bit, I was trying to put, you know, cram too many pieces in there at once. So it became tedious. And this is more of a season when it gets dark earlier. And so if we can read at night, because the boys are, you know, getting ready for bed, and that's something else we struggle with, is getting ready for bed early enough. But if it goes well and my husband can read, then that's wonderful. And if not, then we'll just pray before we go to bed. And if we happen to do an afternoon tea, then maybe we'll read and maybe we won't, and it's okay. And I mean, reading is not the perfect solution to everything. And I envy those moms who love going out on hikes and doing nature study. And that's something that I struggle with prioritizing. So this really just comes from a life of loving books and wanting to do it. I wouldn't want to put a burden on someone who wasn't enjoying.
Yeah, that's a good encouragement. All right, before we close, I would love to hear your recommendations of maybe not a book that someone might not have heard of. So we can go to Redeemed Reader and other great resources for a lot of classic books and newer books that have been around for a little while. But if you were going to leave listeners today with maybe a suggestion for mom, maybe a picture book, and then maybe a middle grade chapter book or something, what would be a recommendation you'd give?
All right, let's see. This was a really hard question because I'm thinking, what, only one? So I'm going to have to talk fast. Miss Mantle Chronicles by M.I. McAllister. These are being reprinted by Purple House Press.
I am so excited. Okay. I'm so excited because nobody talks about this book series.
Really?
Nobody. And I'm like, why is not everyone reading this book series?
So we listened to it several years ago when we were on a family trip. And I was really impressed. And yes, I was surprised that it had taken so long for me to hear about this. So I think in my review on Redeemed Reader, I tried to explain how it models truth and story. And I think I've read through book either two or three. You know, I just always have these series. I'm starting a new one and trying to finish the old one. So yes, definitely Miss Mantle books. I'm going to sneak a poetry one in there. This is I'm Just No Good at Rhyming and Other Nonsense for Mischievous Kids and Immature Grownups. It's by Chris Harris and illustrated by Lane Smith. I discovered it at Barnes & Noble several years ago. And after making sure that it looked like there wasn't anything I objected to, I brought it home. My boys were reading it on the way home and laughing. And I kept laughing. And then my son was reading it outside the bathroom door when his father came home because he couldn't wait to share it. And right now my 14-year-old is memorizing a poem from this book for his individual event for Classical Conversations. So that's a really fun, I don't really like poetry. What do I do about poetry? Okay, for mom, I'm going to recommend something old. And something new, really quick. There's Steeped in Stories by Metalli Perkins. This is where she goes into old classic books, and these are books that she loves and that she grew up on, but she also recognizes that some of their assumptions, their cultural assumptions, are not necessarily loving. Okay. But she's not going at them to tell us why we shouldn't read them. It's more with grace. Metalli Perkins is a Christian. And so she's reading these old books with grace and saying, yes, this is, you know, this was wrong, but this is what this book does really, really well. So I appreciate that approach. And last year, I finally read finally finished reading Les Mis, Unabridged. I'd been meaning to for 30 years, and I finally committed to getting it done. And then I finally finished reading the Harry Potter series 20 years after they came out, enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And now I can enter into those conversations with my son. And I got halfway through the Anne of Green Gables series that I loved the TV show, but I'd never read the books when I was 14. I know, it's shocking. And I don't think that I had the maturity then that I would have really enjoyed and appreciated them. I am loving them now. And so I'm just getting ready to start Anne's House of Dreams. And I'm excited because everyone says, oh, I love that one. It's my favorite. So I'm going to read an old copy of Anne's House of Dreams. Picture books. Okay, so we've got The Watcher by Nikki Grimes, and it's illustrated by Brian Collier. This one came out a few years ago, and it's based on Psalm 121. Each stanza ends the lines of poetry with words that are the verses in Psalm 121.
Wow.
It is amazingly crafted, but it's a story about a boy and a girl in a modern school who are struggling with various things, and then they become friends. But the title is The Watcher.
I'm getting goosebumps.
That's amazing. I know. Me too. It is amazingly crafted. Okay, so I'm going to give you a really fun one because I have boys. This is Shark versus Train by Chris Barton and illustrated by Tom Lichtenheld. And this is just fun. And then, one more for Mom. Honey for a Child's Heart, the 50th anniversary edition that actually recommends Redeemed Reader. And I got to endorse this one, which was so cool because this is a book that was part of starting my journey back when I was in college. So if you want some good book lists and some articles about how to appreciate children's books, not just why you ought to read, but more, it's the truth and story ideas. And then I'm also going to put out, this is my book.
Yes.
Something better coming. and that is a story in itself, but especially as it's a book about resurrection and about the power of Jesus Christ over death, but it's not limited to Easter. And it's a picture book, but it's not limited to children. And there's a 98-year-old lady in our church who every time she sees me, she says, there's something better coming. And she knows it. Yeah. And I'm grateful that my friend, the artist, put no pictures of the face of Jesus Christ in it, but he did the illustrations in such a way that I'm trying to think how to put this into words, but he illustrated it in such a way that that adults would appreciate it too. And so my desire is that many families would read this book and encourage one another that there is something better coming. And that's something that children can say over and over again. And it's something that weary adults and tired homeschool mamas need to hear.
Yes. Oh, our eternal hope is where our true rest and joy comes on those weary homeschool mom days, those weary just family moments. So what an encouragement. I look forward to checking that one out too. I'm like, okay, when we're done here, I'm going to see how many.
And I should tell you, Something Better Coming is not on Amazon. It is independently published, but you can go to my website. I have a website, somethingbettercoming.com, and that's where you can get it.
Great. And I will put that link in the show notes too.
Excellent.
Everybody's going to have to just go check out all the show notes today. There's lots and lots of links to things.
I try.
Oh, here at the end, before we close, I'm going to ask you the questions I'm asking every guest this season. And so the first is just, what are you personally reading lately?
Well, like I said, I am going to, I'm getting ready to start Anne's House of Dreams. And I'm reading some books. Let's see, I just finished reading Fallout by Steve Sheinkin. Oh my goodness. That one I started reading for a committee that I'm on and also for Redeemed Reader. And my 14-year-old looked over my shoulder because he was watching my face and my reactions. And he started reading over my shoulder and then he said, I want to read that. Okay, fine. He finished it with a flashlight before midnight.
Oh my goodness.
It's a really, really good book. So right now I'm reading Amber and Clay by Laura Amy Schlitz. And let's see, with the Redeemed Reader team, we're working through the feminization of culture in America, we're reading it very slowly, but it is fascinating. And then this morning I started a book by Joan Aiken because she's a trusted author. And it's really important to check out good books from the library and not just buy them, because then the library keeps those stats and keeps them on the shelf. So I really like Joan Aiken. She's a British author. And I looked at this one and thought that would be a new one I haven't read, but I think that I'll enjoy it with my books.
Okay, more books added to my to-be list.
That's what I do.
I love it. I love it so much. Okay. Well, the final question would be, what are your best tips for helping the homeschool day run smoothly?
This is easy, not because I always apply it, but because years ago, my pastor's wife saw that I posted on Facebook, oh, I'm not ready for school to start. I didn't have all my planning and I wasn't ready for summer to end. And she said, what is this ready of which you speak? Love your children, teach them what you can, and lean hard on Jesus. And when all else fails, it's not the curriculum and it's not the books and it's nothing that I do. I love my children. I teach them what I can. And if I can lean hard on Jesus and they can see that, then that's grace.
Oh, what a beautiful, wonderful way to bring this to a conclusion. Thank you for chatting with us today, Megan. This has been so much fun. And where can people find you all around the internet?
Okay. Redeemedreader.com is where I write book reviews and collaborate on other resources. One of my favorite articles that I did a couple years ago was Ordinary Homeschooling Just Served Dinner, because I realized I was trying to spread a feast and I was exhausted. And really my children just need a simple dinner, whether it's frozen pizza and cucumbers or a really special feast or somewhere in the middle. So Redeemed Reader, definitely. And then also on somethingbettercoming.com is where they can learn about my book and Lord willing, there'll be some other things coming up. So.
All right, great. Well, I will put those links in the show notes along with the other things we've talked about today over at the post for this episode at humilityanddoxology.com. And I'll chat with you later.
Thank you so much, Amy. It was a delight.
Thanks for listening in on this week's Homeschool Conversation. For show notes and links to all the resources we discussed, head to humilityanddoxology.com/homeschool-conversations. And if these episodes are an encouragement to you, would you take a moment to leave a rating and review and to share with your friends? I am so thankful that you are here on this adventure with me. Let's repent of our constant striving, relish the joy of learning, and rest in the work of Christ on our behalf. Stand fast, my friends.